The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
We have seen indications that the Ukrainians are going a bit more on the offense now. They have been defending very smartly, very nimbly, very creatively in places that they believe are the right places to defend.
Some Western officials had predicted that the Ukrainian capital would fall within 72 hours of the start of the invasion. But nearly a month in, Kyiv is still out of Russia's hands. Moscow's bid to encircle the capital has been hampered by counterattacks from the Ukrainian side. On Tuesday, Ukrainian forces drove Russian troops from the Kyiv suburb of Makariv, allowing them to retake a key highway to the west of the capital.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It is great to be here with you today. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always a delight. Thank you, Mark. It's good to have you here. It's great to be here with Maggie, broadcasting along with me, and it's always a joy to spend my afternoons with you. We got a lot to get into today, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with you again today. We'll take a look at everything from the latest in Ukraine to the Supreme Court judge confirmation hearings to nuclear weapons. We'll be joined by an expert on this. This is going to be a great conversation. Experts say that Vladimir Putin is probably going to use a nuclear weapon. And we're not talking these massive weapons, but low-yield weapons. And I'm going to tell you why. We'll be joined by by a person who's testified before Congress many times, head of the EMP Commission. It's just a call to prayer, but I really believe the consecration of Our Lady, what's going to take place this coming Friday, is going to play such a huge role in bringing peace and protection to the world. So as we get in that issue, I don't want fear. I want hope. I was listening to Father Simon, who is in studio here right before me. And somebody called in and said, do we have to pray and fast on Friday? No, it's a solemnity. My call to you is constantly throughout Lent to pray and to fast. All right. We need to be praying and fasting, doing penance, giving alms, especially for peace in the world. And I think we should do that when you can. Solemnities, special days, of course. Father Simon also forgot to mention that he is going to be speaking. And I said, well, Father, maybe I could plug that for you. I'll give you a quick plug. If you are in the, I guess it's the Illinois area, St. John's in Steamwood. Did I get that right? Is it Steamwood, Maggie? I don't know. That's where it's going to be tonight, so you can check it out. If you want to meet him personally, that's where he will be. But anyway, it's great to be here with you today. On Friday, Father Rocky and I will anchor the consecration event, is what I'm calling it. It's good. The prayer will take place around 12:30 Central Time, but it begins with a penance service. We'll give you some pre and post commentary on all that unfolds. So I hope you'll be able to join me there. Hey, a lot going on. Let's start off with what's happening on Capitol Hill. We can also talk about what's happening overseas, too, because that demands prayer. But Ketanji Brown Jackson claims the right to kill babies in abortions. I couldn't believe that. Horrible story. During her Senate confirmation hearings today, she falsely claimed that there was a right, or I should actually say yesterday, to abortion in the Constitution, even though no such right exists. And she basically said that, you know, Roe v. Wade is settled law. Listen to what she had to say.
If you're confirmed, you will be in a position to apply the court's decision in Dobbs, whatever that decision is going to be. And you've talked about following precedent and what the court decides. So do you commit to respecting the court's decision if it rules that Roe was wrongly decided and that the issue of abortion should be sent back to the states?
Senator, whatever the Supreme Court decides in Dobbs will be the precedent of the Supreme Court. It will be worthy of respect in the sense that it is the precedent, and I commit to treating it as I would any other precedent of the
Supreme Court. There's one other thing. One of the central issues in the Dobbs case is about the whether the Constitution protects the right to an abortion. So let's talk about that. Can you explain to me, on a constitutional basis, the court's decision in Roe, and where is abortion protected in the Constitution?
Senator, abortion is a right that the Supreme Court has recognized in the is one of the kinds of rights that is unenumerated. Okay. It is in that same category of rights that the Supreme Court has recognized.
But the text of the Constitution does not mention abortion.
That is true.
That is true. That is correct.
You know, it's just so frustrating. I almost, let me just say something before I go on. I almost wasn't going to play any of this audio for you. You know why? I mean, there's so much more. I will play some more because I think you need to know who's going to sit on the Supreme Court. I said to Maggie before the show, I said, there's a very powerful prayer St. Faustina wrote in her diary. And the Lord told her, when you need to pray for the conversion of someone, pray this prayer. And it's that beautiful prayer we say during the chaplet, oh, blood and water, which gushed forth from the heart of Jesus as a fountain of mercy for us. I trust in you. I'll share that maybe a little bit later. I'll share exactly what Faustina said and why that was given to her. I said, I almost want to pray it after every clip because we need to pray for her conversion. She's going to be a Supreme Court justice. That's why I almost don't want to talk about this. This is nonsense. It's done. I mean, for anyone to not say, hey, abortion's wrong, period. You know what? I have a real problem with that. I do all this wordplay, semantics, dancing. It's frustrating to me. It is so frustrating. You think the life issue is frustrating, right? Pray for her conversion on that issue. Here's what she had to say about the definition of a woman. And again, this is just so absolutely ridiculous. Why can't people say things? You know, why can't you answer a question when somebody asks you? Listen to this. Again, that's Senator Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee. Here she is with some more questioning. Listen.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
The meaning of the word woman is so unclear and controversial that you can't give me a definition?
Senator,
Maggie, hold that for 1 second. I had to jump in here on that live just because you're a woman, right? Don't you know who you are? You know, you are going to be the first black, quote, woman, right? It's so frustrating. I said I was going to talk about it. It's driving me crazy. It is. You're a woman, right? You are a woman. You can't define what you are. Maggie, play the rest of the clip. Do you have it or no? Okay, we cut out of it. Okay, we'll play the last clip then. We'll go to this other one. I didn't mean to jump on that, but I just had to stop it. It's inane. It's ridiculous. And I can't believe we're entertaining this. I wish some senators would say, that's ridiculous. You don't deserve to be on the Supreme Court if you can't define who you are. You don't have to be a biologist to say who you are, you know, to define what a woman is. I can define what a male is. And I don't have to be a biologist to do that. Senator John Neely, he also asked, is this the clip, Maggie, what you were talking about? Yeah, sorry, John Kennedy, Neil Kennedy. He's the senator from Louisiana. I want to get back to the life issue, too, because these are two really critical issues. He asked the question, when does life begin? Again, another one of these no-brainers, right? I mean, some people say, oh, we really don't know. I mean, look, science has really evolved since 1973. We know when life begins, right? But listen to this.
When does life begin, in your opinion?
Senator, I don't know.
Ma'am?
I don't know.
I don't know when life begins. I don't know what a woman is. I don't know... Really? I mean, there are literally no words for this. I don't know if you share my frustration on this. I mean, this is ridiculous. And as my frustration mounts, you know, I had to pray for peace, and we have to pray for her. This is all part. She's a radical ideologue is what she is. And this is all part of what this administration is putting forward. If you don't think your vote matters, if you don't like a particular candidate, you know, because of the way they tweet or way they look or what their political party is, fine. But you have to look at their moral character and what they represent and how their ideology will affect the rest of this country. So the president of the United States gets to nominate the Supreme Court. The Senate confirms them. The people you put into the Senate, the people that you put into the executive branch, will have profound impact on the law of this land. All right? And that is not just, I shouldn't say the law of the land, on the courts. And unfortunately, we're seeing the courts try to legislate, right? In addition to that, you know that what happens here, it's a farce. And I'll leave it at that because that's just what it is. It's just a farce. I mean, she's going to go ahead and be nominated and confirmed. She's nominated. She's going to be confirmed. That's why, you know, there's more I could play for you. I'm not going to waste your time. I'm not going to waste my time. I just want you to, if you could, to pray. All right. I just want you to pray and pray for her. I'll share more. I'm going to bring you up to speed on what Zelensky is doing, what's happening today. I'll answer some of those questions. You ever wonder what the Z on the Russian tanks were or why we're saying Kyiv now as opposed to Kiev? I'll get into that coming up. But I do want to welcome to the program in just a minute here, Dan Kish. He's a senior vice president for policy at the Institute of Energy Research. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about energy as well. As you know, your gas prices have gone up. I don't know how much it cost you to pump your gas recently. I filled my wife's car up and I choked when I saw the meter. Now, I'm in a state right now where the gas prices are higher probably than the national average. That's for sure. But, you know, your natural gas, your oil, all these different things, it's crazy. And then you have to remember also that there are a lot of products that are also made with oil. I'm not sure you're familiar with even a fraction of those particular items. And I don't want to take too much time because I want to get to my guest on this. I'll go through some of those. But your sunglasses, your eyeglasses, you know, plastic bags, synthetic materials, nylons, acrylic, spandex, you know, tires, lipstick, nail polish, sports equipment, golf balls and bags, and you name it, dentures, hearing aids. Those are just some of the things that are byproducts of oil. Just some of them. Just some of those. So we're going to see everything go up. Food is going to go up. I saw an article right before coming into the broadcast here that China bought twice as much gas from Russia right before the invasion. They knew what was going down. So here to give us a perspective on what is now unfolding, and I only have him for a few moments, is Dan Kish. It's good to have him with us because he's got more than 25 years of experience on congressional committees focused principally upon natural resources and our energy policies. Dan, thank you for making time for us. Always good to have you here. Good afternoon.
Thank you for having me, Drew, and I hope you don't hold all that Capitol Hill time against me.
You got it. Yeah, it's so frustrating what I'm seeing on Capitol Hill. I don't know how.
It's changed. I can tell you it's changed quite a bit.
It really has. We seem more divisive today, don't we, than we ever have? At least there was,
there was
partisanship, but there was at least dialogue.
Sure.
Today,
sure.
The political ideologies are so hardened, there's no exchange. It's actually quite sad, whether it's health care, whether it's energy, things along those lines. Give me your sense of what's going on here, Dan, just what we as Americans are going to see in the not-too-distant future. We know how much oil, Russia exported. We only had, 7 or 10% of that. But, you know, we're begging Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and a lot of other nations, Iran, for help. We've got natural resources here. Russia, the Ukraine war, how will that impact us economically here? And what about our own resources?
Well, great questions all. We have tremendous... One of the things that we have, I think, broken the back of over the past decade or so was this idea that somehow we're running out of what people call fossil fuels, mm-hmm. Coal, oil, and gas. That was one of the arguments that people used to use to say that it doesn't matter if we drill or we mine or anything because we have so little. As it turns out, God gave us enormous resources in this country and in this continent. And we have hundreds of years of oil, hundreds of years of gas, half a thousand years of coal at today's consumption. And that's the stuff that we found. So that's not an issue. The real issue has become the sort of religion of climate, if you will. Some people choose to believe that that is that somehow we're in control of that,
yeah.
And without getting into whether we are or not,
right.
That guides their approach to energy. So anything that is, quote, fossil fuels, mm-hmm. Ends up, they're opposed to it. And as you correctly point out, it's really not fossil. It's organic. Yeah. It's organic material. Anybody who studied chemistry in high school or college knows that organic chemistry is based upon carbon. And we're carbon-based life forms. That's what we're made of, and that's what. And these organic materials can be manipulated in ways that make our life easier, like plastics, and it's used in pharmaceuticals. It's yeah. used for piping. It's you name it.
Yeah, I think you're right too. I mean, I love what you had to say because we really are worshiping right now at the altar of the environment. And look, I'm all about making sure that we're good stewards of this environment, and I think we need to be. It's our moral duty and responsibility. However, we do know that we have been blessed with natural resources here, and we do know that energy security is directly tied to national security. And you see what's now happening, how vulnerable we have become, and what it means even for the international community as a result of this dependency that we have. I don't know how we change the current mindset. We're in an administration right now that for the next several years, they're going to be trying to advance this environmental agenda. Every 4 years or 8 years, potentially, we change administrations. We need to get on the same page on this issue. Do you think what we're going through right now internationally is a learning experience for both parties?
Yes, I do. I think to some degree, people were lulled into complacency because about 5 years, we had steady energy prices without much change. People got used to that. They budgeted it. And that's the thing. It hurts when people go to the pump, and something has to eventually give somewhere else. And whether it's a family or a business or a church or you name it, when the cost of energy goes up, and in a regular market system, sometimes you have prices go up and then they come down and that sort of thing. But if it's done directly to reduce the supply, as I fear is happening now by the government, to make it harder to use, to produce, to transport by pipeline or any other means, then we're basically inflicting a lot of pain on people that they needn't go through. I mean, folks on fixed income and ones with the least money shouldn't be put into this situation just so someone can prove a point.
Well, look, I know we've only had you for a few moments. I'd love to bring it back. I always enjoy your insight and your knowledge as well. If people want to, read up or get up to speed on this issue to have a balanced view, what would you recommend? A good resource you want to drive people to?
Well, I think the Institute for Energy Research is a good place to start. We try to keep it. We definitely have opinions about things, but mm-hmm. we back it up with all the data to go with it, Drew.
That's awesome.
And that's instituteforenergyresearch.org.
Hey, thank you, Dan. Great to have you here. I appreciate you making time for us today and look forward to the next time we catch up.
Thank you, Drew.
That's Dan Kesh, Senior Vice President for Policy at the Institute for Energy Research. You can check him out, IER. All right. I have got to take a short pause here. When we come back, we will talk more. You're more than welcome to join me, too. You know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. More to come straight ahead. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Do children become more social when they are sent to full-day kindergarten? They tend to become peer-attached, and when they do so, they pursue contact and closeness with their peers. We think this is social development. In actual fact, it is coming at a great cost, because when children orbit around their peers, they're pulled out of orbit around the adults that are responsible for them, and that is absolutely essential for healthy development. And thirdly, children tend to lose their separation anxiety. So we think, oh my goodness, they're dealing much better. But they're only losing their separation anxiety because they're more attached now to their peers than their adults. This is not a good sign. When children are in a position of stress, and the research shows that when you're outside of your attachments, that cortisol levels go sky high and you're in a position of stress, is that the brain equips us for a wounding environment. When it does, a child talks less about his hurt feelings, cries less, and we think that children are becoming more resilient. And these are false indicators. They're actually false indicators of socialization, and that's what we misinterpret.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was developmental psychologist Dr. Robert Neufeld on putting kids in full day kindergartens and daycares. I've been thinking a lot about this. My kids are all out of school right now, and I've been seeing these reports about child development, how masks as a result of COVID has affected them, how we've readjusted our standards. I don't know where you are. Maybe you've got grandkids. Maybe you have children. You know, maybe you're ready for your first. I don't know. A lot of parents struggle with the question, should you stay at home with your child, or should you place them in daycare, you know, and while you go to work and you make the money? Now, believe me, I understand. Mortgages are expensive. The cost of living is high. You know, so you might need two incomes. Maybe you're both working with good careers and suddenly find yourself pregnant. There are many on both sides of the fence when it comes to judging which situation is in the best interest of the children. Some families believe their children develop better socially. They mature well in a daycare environment, right? There's a lot of advantages to it. Other families believe that stay-at-home parents, staying home parenting is really proper for nurturing the child. In just a moment, I'm going to be joined by a gifted writer and a homemaker. Her name is Tara Thiek, and she wrote a great piece with us. We're going to talk a little bit about it. I'll give you my personal story, my personal example. My wife stayed home and raised all five of our children. You know, we had six kids in like 5 years. Every time we turned around, we were pregnant again, right? And it was a brood, right? But she stayed home, and thank God she could do that, right? My career and you know, the ability to do that was there. I have a brother-in-law and a sister-in-law. She's a school teacher, and he had a job. They sent their children to daycare, you know? And you know something? I look at both families. I'll just compare these two families here. The kids are fine. I mean, their kids did very well. You know, they graduated. They're stable. They're normal. Nobody's addicted. Nobody's in jail. I mean, they seem to be okay. My kids, same way. I mean, we're thank God for that. So what role does staying at home versus daycare play? And look, I'm going to open the phones to you, too. You're more than welcome to sound off. Maybe you've been through this and you regret sending your kids to daycare. Maybe you wish you sent them to daycare. I don't know. You could go ahead and dial in 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, and we'll talk about it. You know, the United States Census Bureau reported that as of, I think, maybe 5 years ago, the cost of daycare has doubled just in the last 25 years. And 7% of family income is spent on child care. So it's a lot of money, and I'm sure that cost is continuing to go up. But there's lots of benefits. There's also lots of cons. Here to give us some perspective is Tara Thiek, and it's great to have her with us today. You can follow her on Twitter if you want it. Tara, Tara Ann Thiek. Thiek is spelled T-H-I-E-K-E. And Tara, I got to ask you a very personal question before we begin. All right. Your name, is it Tara or is it Tara? And the reason I ask that is because I got a sister named Tara. I always call her Tara.
It's Tara.
All right. Both are very beautiful names. I think it's a great name. Where did your mom get that name from?
Ireland. I mean, it was actually my dad's family, Irish, so they chose it for him.
I love it. My older sister is Alicia. That's what I call her. But you know, when I take phone calls on the air, I see the name spelled A-L-I-C-I-A. And is it Alicia or is it Alicia? I can never tell. So, or my daughter, Andrea Marie, is it A-N-D-R-E-A? Are you Andrea or are you Andrea? You know, I'm always being challenged. Good to have you with me today, and I love your perspective on this. I've read your article, and I think this affects a lot of parents out there who are really discerning right now what to do. Should I keep my kid at home? Should we maybe make a little bit less money?
and try to make ends meet, or are there benefits to sending kids to school? And let me just, I'll throw you the opposite first, and you give me your take. You know, there are a lot of benefits to going to school. A lot of people say, you know, kids might develop a little better. They get over that separation anxiety faster. Socialization skills increase. I mean, there's a lot of pros to that. I'm glad my wife was able to raise our children. I think there's something very beneficial to that maternal bond as well. But I'd love your take. Take us through it. How do you see it? What are the pros and cons? And what advice would you give to those parents discerning this right now?
Well, obviously, this is just incredibly complex topic, because how we raise our children ties into everything. It ties into what kind of people we become, what we believe, what sort of jobs we have, what economy we set up. It just touches every issue of society, and it's so personal for that reason, which makes it hard to talk about. Because if you are a parent who has decided, or maybe didn't decide out of desire but out of necessity, to put your children in daycare, it's very painful to have to talk about the downsides, because every parent wants to be the best parent they can be. And I think one of the problems we've had over the past few decades is the sensitivity around that has made it very hard to talk about. And when people hear things about the reality, they kind of push it away. In my article, I talk about some of the researchers who said they didn't like what they were finding. And you see this bias pop up again and again with people wanting to reassure parents that they're doing the best that they can for their kids. But it's not necessarily true. Parents will, having worked in daycare, parents will drop off their kids, and after a few weeks, the kids adjust, they aren't crying, and everyone's really proud of themselves and happy about it. And that's when we think, oh, look, the separation anxiety has gone away. That's not necessarily true. Just because a child isn't crying doesn't mean they're not stressed. And when we take salivary cortisol readings during the day of children in care who aren't manifesting signs of distress, they have highly elevated cortisol. And that changes the development of your brain. It changes what kind of mental health they're going to have. It can change the expression of your genes. That can influence their children.
Can I stop you on that point for a minute? Because I'm just curious. I am so perplexed today by a phenomenon, an epidemic that's going on in the world of psychology or psychiatry with kids. I mean, I can't tell you how many 20-some-year-olds, teenagers, and young adults today have anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
And based on what you're saying, if it changes, you know, the development of their brain, and it may even and their stress levels or cortisol levels, you know, we've never seen so many kids in daycare as we have in the past 20 years. So is there a connection, do you think, between the high anxiety levels that we're seeing across the country and around the world today? I'm stunned by it. And to the fact that daycare has risen.
Absolutely. It's a hard thing to study, because we're talking about things that happen when someone is 3 versus how they're doing when they're 35. But, and I wouldn't say it's the only factor, but it's certainly playing a role. Children are learning from a very early age that their environment doesn't belong to them, that they are just dropped off, that caregivers are going to sort of come and go as they please, that their peers are there, and then the parent moves and has to put the kid in another school. And all of those things have a message that stays with the kid, even if the kid's not crying or obviously distressed. And those issues are going to start coming out in early adolescence, when they start going to social media to look for the approval and the attention that they weren't getting from their parents and their family members as a child. And they might not even know. They might not remember what happened in the past.
Right. Okay.
And that makes it sort of hard to trace.
Makes sense.
I think one of the good examples of how to look at this phenomenon is studies about moving and children and mental health. And it's easier to be honest there. People aren't as attached to their careers or their role as parents. So we can study what happens when you move a child throughout their life. And in the Danish study, where they study about 1.4 million people, they found that any childhood move increases your risk of mental illness, even if you're a baby, especially actually in some ways if you're very little, because your surroundings, your neural networks are suddenly having to change to a new environment. You've just been shown the world is very unstable. And when we're doing that with children every day, giving them a sense that their home, their context, and their stories are peripheral, they're not as important, that their caregivers are someone who are looking after 20 children and there's no one to pay attention to them, those things have a message, and that message starts manifesting later in life, making it more difficult to form lasting relationships, all those things that we're seeing today.
That's wild. Well, let's do this. Let's take a couple quick calls for you. A lot of people around the country want to tap into your expertise. We'll start in Secaucus, New Jersey. Pat is listening there. Good afternoon, Pat.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My wife and I were fortunate enough. My job, I'm a professional firefighter, and I do shift work, so I have a couple of days off in between. And my wife was able to share her job time with another person that did the same thing. And we raised our kids, you know, without going to babysitters or other family members. And it was such a big difference from what we heard, what we did with our children, with other kids who dropped their kids off at babysitters. Like, for instance, our kids were learning ABCs. We helped them with, you know, reading and things like that. And we were able to spend time with them, you know, a lot more. You don't get the time back when your child's, you know, sharing their special moments with, you know, with a babysitter or, you know, a caretaker that you're paying. You lose out all on that, you know. And we were blessed that we were able to spend as much time as we did with our kids, you know, and not, you know, chase the extra money for, you know, for the family, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think that's great, Tara. I'll let you respond. You know, Pat, I don't think you'll ever regret it. You know, I think there's a special bond between, you know, mother and child and father and child if you're able to do that. And you're blessed to do that. I understand you're a firefighter. Do you have a flexible schedule with your duties?
Yes, I do. I'm able to, you know, I work some of my shifts. I could, you know,
that's awesome.
You know, work a tour, have 2 days off, or, you know, or, you know, work a night shift and be home for the day. So
that's great.
I've been blessed with that job too, which, you know, has given me so many opportunities to spend the time with my family.
Well, thanks for calling. I'll let Tara respond to you. Go ahead, Tara.
I think that's just wonderful. And when you're having those hardships in the moment, it's going to seem like it's forever that you're home with the kids and dealing with all those issues and short of money. But at the end of the day, in 20 years from now, you're going to have those memories with your kid, not someone who's disappeared. I've been a nanny for multiple families. I loved all the children I worked with. And it breaks my heart that I have so many good memories of those kids and watching them develop. And they belong to me. They're my memories. Yeah. And the kids don't hear those stories down the road.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, thanks. Yeah. Appreciate the call. Appreciate your service, too.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. We'll move along. Go to Mary in Pasadena, California. Mary, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
So my story is my husband and I have 5 children. And when our youngest was getting ready to go to kinder, I thought, well, I can go back and start to work and help out. And my eldest came to me and said, Mom, if you go back to work, our house is going to fall apart. And I never went back to work.
I love it. You got a wise child. That's for sure. Tara, what happens in situations like that? I mean, how do other children respond to this in the family? I mean, and what happens to the house, too? I guess you got to share duties or, I don't know. There are some people who say, I can't afford my mortgage without going back to work. You know, I don't have the flexibility of a firefighter. And they've got to go. Like I said, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, their family seems relatively stable.
There are just going to have to be situations where the parent does have to go back to work. I think the most important thing in those situations is to be able to talk about the cost and to be able to say, okay, we're going to advocate for solutions that don't make this choice necessary. But until then, we're going to be open with our family members and our friends. Hey, if you ever get a chance to do extra help, think of us. We're going to try to make relationships with the caregivers. We want to talk about preschools and daycares be more personalized so that children can create a space for themselves that's theirs and not constantly be maneuvered around according to the needs of administrators. If we were to put those needs first, you know, it wouldn't have perhaps such a negative effect on anxiety for children.
Gotcha. Well, hey, thank you for your call. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, my guest today, Tara Thiek, we're taking a look at homeschooling, not homeschooling, we're taking a look at staying at home with your child during those early years of development and sending them off to daycare, the pros and cons of it. If you want to get in, feel free to try. 888-914-9149. Of course, in about 13 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy as well. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on, okay? As I often say, time is the enemy. Just a few minutes in this next segment. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm handing holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Coming up in just a minute, we will continue our Chaplet of Novenas. Making our way to the end of it, actually, praying for peace. And you are welcome to join me for that. It's an anointed time of prayer, no doubt about it. If you're just tuning in, I thought we'd take a look at daycare versus stay-at-home parenting. Is one better? Are they both the same? Are the pros or the cons? Is it not either or? How does that all shake out? And I was also thinking about COVID. You know, I saw studies. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think, on the air, where they've changed the standards. I've had child psychologists on the air talking about for children's development. And I'm thinking, why are you changing the standards? Why don't we look at the cause of those lower scores? And could it be COVID? Could it be masks? Could it be wearing those masks? Did kids really need to wear masks? I'm joined today by Tara Thiek, and we're taking a look at this. She wrote a great piece on this issue, in fact, and you can check it out. Hey, Tara, let me ask you before we go back into the phones. I do want to grab a few more calls for you. I just want your sense or your take of the mask wearing for children, and then the impact that may have had on their development, and your thoughts on the lowering of these standards.
I think it was a big mistake. Regardless of any disease transfer issues, children need to see faces. I'm still sort of astounded that we reached a place where that had to be debated. The first thing infants are looking at is a face. They're learning from the moment they're born to focus on the face. That continues all through childhood. It's where trust forms. It's where bonds form. It's where a child learns to feel recognized and to understand other people's emotions. And to cover half the face for so long for preschoolers is an incredible way to build a sense of aloneness. And that is something that we're going to see issues with for a long time.
It's really a profound point you make. We're seeing the impact of COVID on the kids already. What's the long-term effect on this? So pretty, and I don't know whether it would change if kids were at home versus, I guess at home, they wouldn't be wearing their masks. So maybe that was a point in favor at home. You know, parenting in those early years. Let's take a few more calls. California is on deck, and Margaret's got a comment for you. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Drew.
You're welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tara. I wanted to ask you about a different aspect of my raising my kids, was that it also depends on my husband going back to school after bachelor's, and I had to work full-time for my first child. I have three. But I would drop them off between my parents and then my in-laws. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't afford it. We started from nothing, you know. Long story short, the youngest was the one that went to daycare just once or twice because we moved to a different house and my husband got laid off. He's an engineer. And I became a stay-at-home mom after the second child. But because he got laid off, see, it's always the job usually that affects the situation. And so he had to be put in daycare, and he didn't like it at all. But he's my smartest child. He could read. And in kindergarten, he was bored because he was second grade level because he went back home when my husband found a job. So I think kids can adjust as long as they know that there's a balance. And you explain why these situations happen. Like when you spank a child, you say, I don't I don't like spanking children, but somebody told me that when you spank a child once on the butt, it doesn't have to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
You just say, I did this because I love you, but because you did this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so,
okay.
And so, yeah, I don't know. It's
all right. Let me let Tara jump in here. Tara, did you get the gist of that?
Yes, I did. You know, there can absolutely be benefits to, especially for children who have, you know, incredible mental talents, to being stimulated at an early age. So I would never say that there aren't any benefits for in specific situations. Like anything, it's about balance and where we balance those things. And it sounds to me like you found a good way to talk to your child about the situation and reassure them and give them a sense of home and purpose, while at the same time helping support their need for stimulation, intellectual growth.
It's hard. Parents just want to do the right thing. You know, and it's if there's love in the family, if you're an attentive parent, if you make sure, you know, you're part of their life, I think things balance out. There's a lot. Every family's different. Every situation becomes different. It's hard. Ann's in Salt Lake City, Utah. Ann, hi, you're on the air with Tara Thiek.
Hi, Drew. Thank you so much for having me. I listen to your show every day,
thank you.
I love it.
Oh, thank you.
I learn so much every day. Ms. Tara, I have a question specifically to you. I was raised in a military family, and we moved quite often. I was one of four siblings, and then sometimes my dad worked for a defense contractor, and sometimes literally I would come home and there would be the U-Haul out front with very little warning that we were off to another project.
Wow.
Who was an engineer, and so we would... Oh, there's the U-Haul. Everybody take the position. I would fold the sheets. My sister would pack the dishes. My brothers would take the mattress. Everybody had their role. And there wasn't much discussion about it. It was just basically, well, here we go again. And I remember as I got older, I was a lot less prone when we would go to a new school and then another new school and then another, et cetera. Where I just really didn't extend myself to make so many friends because I thought, well, why bother? We're going to be leaving again. So I was really kind of a bookworm. That was my outlet. But then as I grew into an adult, okay, sometimes kids do exactly what their parents sort of did. And I went into the military and I had children and we would move. We'd move states, we'd move countries, et cetera. And now my children are adult children, and I was listening very closely to what you said, and I looked at some of the problems my siblings and I have experienced in adulthood and also what my children have experienced. And I never really correlated the moving to mental illness. And my eyes just popped open as I heard that correlation being made. And so my question after all of that background is, in your research, did you find a threshold to, you know, frequent versus infrequent moves? You know, was a resiliency established or what type of correlations did you find in that moving data related to children?
It's a good question. I appreciate the call. We only have about a minute for you, Tara, so I'll let you try to respond to that.
Well, early adolescence and early childhood are early infancy are both times where the mind is changing so much that those are times that need extra special support. It's not a death sentence to be moving at those times of life with good family and good storytelling and preserving a sense of connection to these places. I do think it can be overcome, but it is something you need to be aware of and prepared for. Early adolescence, early childhood, like under five, are both times that the mind is particularly being mapped.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Tara, for being with me. As I said, I only have a few seconds left here. Keep up your writing. Keep up your good work. And thanks for joining us today. You did great. And look forward to the next time we can talk.
Thank you so much. I had a wonderful time. I hope everybody has a wonderful day.
Thank you.
God bless.
Tara Thiek, coming up now in about 30 seconds, you can join me as we continue our Chaplet of Novenas. We'll be praying the Chaplet of Divine Mercy for peace. And of course, the Holy Father will consecrate, along with a lot of bishops around the world, Russia and Ukraine, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. I actually have a list of names of dioceses or parishes that are participating in this. I'm going to have Maggie put it up on Twitter,
And you can check to see if yours is there. If they're not, maybe place a call. Be part of it.